Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts, and my name is Alex Croson, and I am sitting across from the man, the legend, Casey Clapp.
Everyone, sit down. It's okay. Wow. I'm only coming at you through your ears. It's not quite that exciting, but thank you. I am Casey Clapp. I do love trees, other related topics, such things, cycling.
A standing O, our first standing O. Casey.
Incredible. Just it's incredible.
Speaking of firsts, we have a first order of business.
Yes, we do. Begin.
Please raise your cans.
Ha! Ah.
That's right. Casey and I have just cracked into two Dr. Brown's draft style root beers.
Since 1869.
That's right. This is not an ad, but Casey, let's take a little sip of this bad boy.
That's delicious. Can I tell you a secret?
It's good root beer. What?
Whence I was younger, I did not like root beer. Didn't like it. Not even a little bit. Thought it tasted unnice.
Yeah.
One of my old coworkers, she's from Brazil, and that is the flavor of their toothpaste.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, whenever anyone would have root beer, she'd be like, I can't do it. It makes me feel like I'm drinking like toothpaste.
This is interesting. Maybe I heard this from you, but... And maybe I'm conflating a couple of stories, but someone had told me once that some drink that we drink as Americans is what another country uses to like perfume their bathrooms.
Oh my God.
Like they put them in urinal cakes and stuff. So every time they drank that thing, or they wouldn't drink that thing because it tasted like a urinal.
Oh man, I have no clue, but that would be, that's hilarious.
Yeah, so there's a couple of instances. And, yeah. And Casey, we're of course cracking open these root beers on theme, as today we are talking about
the soda industry.
Well, you started the right way.
Yeah, I guess.
The sassafras tree.
That's exactly correct, Alex. I'm very excited about
which it. Is, of course, related to the soda industry, as yes. Sassafras used to be, and I guess maybe sometimes is, still the active ingredient in your root beers and such.
Yes, that is correct. At least it was, I mean, it was used, and still, in fact, I think there are still some people that like still do it, like, they'll just go find some root and then go make it, which, of course, we'll talk about in a second.
Yeah.
I think it's still used to be used, is less used now for certain reasons. A little bit is like the standard cola flavor, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that comes from a cola bean, which is from a tree that grows in the tropics. However, we don't use it anymore because you can just artificially create those same flavors.
Right.
Kind of a bummer.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of your high fructose corn syrup story.
It is, isn't it? Like, just so sad. And like, what, a caramel coloring.
Yeah, I believe this soda has both of those.
Yeah, it sure does. Yep. Both, right, they're like the third ingredients.
Well, Casey, let's talk about this darn tree.
Fascinating.
The sassafras, and the binomial for this bad boy.
Oh, it's so good. Sassafras albidum.
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 All right.
Now, sir.
Go ahead.
Wow. Now, I was just going to say, now I love this tree because of its scientific name, the genus, and the common name, the same.
Yeah.
Like Magnolia, almost like Pinus, but not quite.
We love that here.
Don't we? It's because we like it to be easy.
That's right. Casey, let's imagine that you and I, like every episode, are walking through, I don't know, a forest of some kind?
Yeah, the eastern forests of the United States of America.
The eastern
forests. North America in general.
Okay. And we come across some very clear, distinct sassafras trees, very easy to ID, IMO.
Uh-huh.
And I ask you, please, Casey, ID this tree.
Yeah, then we move a big bus and I'm like, here's a sassafras tree. Yeah, I don't really move buses. All right, you're walking through the forest. It's an eastern deciduous forest of the United States of America. The sassafras is like native from Maine and Ontario all the way down to Florida and Texas, all the way over to essentially the Mississippi and the Atlantic.
Mm.
That entire section of North America, essentially what would have been known as like the original size of the country before the Louisiana Purchase, before we went west and took it over, that was the whole country. So this is like a countrywide tree. Of many, there are several other species. But in our eastern deciduous forest, there's not necessarily, usually, a single forest tree that is dominant all over the place. So like here we have the Douglas fir or a ponderosa pine or something like that. Over there, it's a gigantic mix of a bunch of different broadleaf trees. Sometimes there's pine trees, but mostly it's broadleaf.
Okay.
So this is one of them broadleaf trees. It is a tall forest tree, maybe up to about 60 feet tall. It doesn't get huge, but like big enough to hang out.
That's pretty big.
It's a good sized tree. It doesn't get really wide otherwise, but like an oak tree or a walnut or any of these other like big famous, like, you know, the big hitters of the eastern forest.
Yeah.
Those trees will be gigantic dominant things forever. The sassafras tree, it's medium size. It'll grow up. It'll hang with the big boys, but then it'll like find a little side bit and just kind of hang out, you know, on that edge habitat where maybe there's a river or a road or something like that. It's not going to be found in the big, deep, dark forests after an extended period of time because it just gets shaded out.
I see.
It gets outcompeted. But on that edge habitat, you'll find them kind of persisting, or you'll find them in little groves where they happen to find a little bit where there's like, cool, there's a little sassafras here, and there's no, it's just cooking, and the whole rest of the forest hasn't gotten so big that it's overtaken it.
You said 60 feet?
Yeah, about.
Okay, that's about on the high end of like my interest in trees.
Yeah, exactly. You can just see the top of it.
Yeah,
specifically.
And that would be like nice and big for me. Like that's the beech tree out here that we constantly talk about.
It's because it's the most beautiful tree right now. It's just turning spectacular colors.
That's probably about 60 feet, don't you think?
I'd say so. It might be about 75 in there. Yeah,
okay,
but it's about there.
And when I look at that, I'm like, wow, that's a proper tree.
Huge. Yeah, that's a great term
for it.
Yeah, proper.
So the sassafras tree, it's not always going to be a gigantic big old thing.
Okay.
However, it has some really special things to it. It grows up, usually single-stemmed. It's, as you said, a proper tree. There's no shrub-like qualities to it.
Oh, okay.
It'll grow up, and it will have a very kind of weird shape. Like, you know, you see a tree, it has a perfectly straight trunk. It breaks out perfectly, like mm-hmm. a classic, like, Norway maple or a hedge maple or something like this.
Yeah.
Like, it's got that perfect tree, like a kid could draw it kind of tree.
Wow.
The sassafras... Oh, okay. Does not have that.
I see.
The sassafras grows up. It kind of will generally have a crookedish kind of trunk, and but not. It'll grow be like a straight crooked trunk, where it's never going to be like a perfect pencil growing straight up.
Uh-huh.
It'll kind of curve around a little bit as it's going up, and then it'll usually break off into multiple stems and multiple big scaffold limbs, and it will have an upright bell shaped kind of look to it, where it's not going to be this big gigantic perfect circle or oblong thing or like a vase shape where it's very uniform. It'll be kind of an ununiform, upright, not huge, vertical, mostly looking tree.
Is this the first time you've used bell shape to describe the overall morphology of
yeah,
a tree?
I think this is the first time I've used that in the morphology of a tree in my life.
Can I say?
You may.
That's a perfect descriptor.
What, you think so?
Yeah. We've gone through a couple with these shapes of trees.
Yeah, okay.
Bell shaped needs to go in a paper somewhere. As an ID distinction.
You are so sweet to say so.
Sassafras is 100% a bell-shaped tree.
I'm glad you think it. There's a book that I'm looking at right now, and it looks like the hair from the guitarist of Queen. What's his name? Brian May.
Oh, yeah.
His famously gigantic, like, huge perm. This like, drawing looks just like him.
Let me see that. Hold that
yeah,
up.
Yeah, yeah. Now, just imagine a British guitarist underneath that crown.
Oh, okay, yes. 100%.
Yeah.
Wow, his hair, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Well, Casey, I'm really interested to hear about. I want to save a couple things for last.
Okay.
But let's talk bark.
Okay, bark. Oh, actually, I'm so glad you said this. Okay, so the last little bit is that it grows to be kind of like one single stem. The bark in the trunk tends to get, I don't know, 12 inches in diameter. Like, a big old one is going to slowly get large. But you know, like the beech tree, you see a beech tree with 24 inch diameter.
Yeah.
It's pretty medium sized beech tree. You see a sassafras with a 24 inch diameter stem. You're like, that's a huge, huge sassafras.
Yeah.
So this little thing, as it gets bigger, its bark is fucking stunning. I can't say that. I usually don't go so intense about things. That's
wow.
It.
I didn't even.
You know how some people are like fucking huge.
Yeah,
it's kind of what I was like. It's like, I can't do it. I'm gonna do it.
Was that your first F bomb on the podcast?
Oh no, plenty. I know that my mom's listening. She's always gonna be so upset. Love you.
Wow, your parents listen to the podcast. That's cool.
Well, as it works out, the bark of the sassafras tree is like it gets really ridged, not furrowed, but like ridged, as it's like you're pulling it apart from the inside out.
Mm.
But the outside, and I can give anyone in Portland, go to the Hoyt Arboretum, Google real fast, or look up on their website where the sassafras are. Then you're going to go walk down, you're going to find them. You'll know when you see them because their bark is like ripping apart, but it has like this perfectly polished, like dark brown, purplish bark on the outside. So that polished bark on the outside, on the very top of those ridges, and then these really big, thick ridges in between.
Wow.
So I can't really describe it. It looks like armor. But it has like this really gorgeous reddish sheen to it.
Wow.
And it's hard to see. Like, I'm looking at a bunch of Google images, and it just does not do it justice. Not even a little bit.
Okay, yeah. I'm not getting any of that from these pictures that I'm seeing.
I will go take a picture at the Arboretum, and then I will show you what this looks like, because it's beautiful.
Great.
Like, it looks like it's a showstopper.
Wow.
So that's what the bark looks like. These ridges, they're probably about, you know, half an inch or more wide. They look like they're plated on top of the ridges with this really darkly colored bark. It's really hard, and it's very, very like armor-like.
Hmm.
So that's that. It grows up, it gets big, it has that kind of bark all the way through it. At the very tip of the branches, you have these alternately arranged leaves that come out. These leaves are super interesting for one specific reason. They are extremely variable.
Extremely variable.
Yes, they can change.
Yes, okay.
So on the same tree, on the same branch, you can have an entire leaf that is shaped very much like a closed palm of your hand with your thumb tucked in.
Yeah.
So it has that perfect like leaf shape where it just comes up, oblong, ovate, whoop, comes out.
Yeah.
You look a little bit further down that twig, and you'll see one that looks like a mitten with a thumb coming out.
Yeah.
So it has one side is that perfect same entire margin. Then the other side will go down and then have this big fancy lobe that comes out like a thumb. Yeah, one single lobe. Further down on that same stem, you'll see one that has another lobe on the other side, and it'll have this trident look. Like this rounded off trident, like the kind of trident you'd give to a kid when you don't want him to actually poke someone's eye out.
I think we've called that dinosaur. Dinosaur footprint.
That's exactly it. I believe that's the term, which will also appear in a paper somewhere as the perfect descriptor for this tree.
Yeah.
Or for a tree, period. So that's what the leaves look like. And they're so interesting because if you want to do an ID characteristic, you're like, wow, this bark is so stunning. I feel like I want to hug it for days. This tree's medium size. It's got a bell shape. Could this be a sassafras? Find those leaves, bloop, 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 those three different things, and you'll know.
Okay, those are the only three variations. Like, it couldn't grow, like, a fourth lobe or something?
No,
okay.
At least, I mean, potentially it could, you
Maybe
know?
Maybe somewhere deep in the forest right now there is a four-lobe sassafras.
Very, very possibly.
Okay.
But who knows? In this case, or usually, I guess, you'll always find it with the 2, 0, or 3.
Casey, I see that the sassafras also sports what I would characterize as an underwhelming flower.
I think that's pretty reasonable. Underwhelming. It's in the laurel family, so it's just kind of got this weird little blah blah.
Yeah.
It doesn't do a whole lot. It kind of ends at the end of the twig. I don't think it's very very smelly, actually. I'm not sure about that. I've never read too many things that have said that they are really like super smelly, but I've never smelled them. Most of the time, I just see that there is some flowers up like in the early spring, and then they kind of move on. I'm just taken by the bark. That's all I see.
Sure. The flowers are also sort of like sort of monochrome.
Oh, yeah. Like, just kind of like yellow cream.
Yeah. They're not really colorful. It's a nice color, but it is sort of like a pale, I don't know, sickly yellow.
Yeah, it doesn't really do a lot for me.
Yeah, me either.
Oh, well. It is mostly dioecious, though. So they usually have a female and male tree. Two houses, this means dioecious.
Yes.
Separate plants. And usually that's it. So like the fruit, it's not very interesting. They get a shiny black ovate little cup thing in the laurel family. Yeah, fruit's nothing special.
Yeah, it's so-so.
Yeah.
But Casey, what is something special is what we'll be talking about after the break.
That's exactly right.
We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary.
I'm going to take a drink of my root beer.
Cheers, my friend.
Casey, you know our future is bright.
Yeah, it is, Alex.
But it's so bright, we got to wear shades.
What?
Casey and I are now putting on our gooder glasses.
Oh, man. I can't see a damn thing.
Hey, they do the job, huh?
These things are great.
Casey, that's right. This episode is brought to you by Gooder.
That sure is right.
That is Goodr. They make fashionable sunnies.
They make fantastic sunglasses. Alex, I got a quick story. When they approached us, I said, I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. They saved me when I was riding my bike across Iowa in Ragbri last July.
Wow.
I couldn't see. I got hit in the eye. So one of my eyes from a week prior would not constrict. It was constantly dilated.
Oh my God.
So I had to wait till it like essentially refixed itself. I ended up needing to wear sunglasses on the entire drive and driving back over, but I had cheap gas station sunglasses.
Yeah.
It was $5 or something.
Yeah.
And they just did not do the job. I was absolutely in hell. And then stopped over at a shop that was there. And then picked up a pair of sunglasses, and it said it was $25. And I was like, what? These are okay. I'll try them out. I just need a new pair.
Yeah.
All polarized. I put them on my face, and it was like the world had changed.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I cried, Alex.
Casey,
like, I love these sunglasses.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. They saved me.
That's amazing, Casey. And they didn't save me yet.
Well, the time will come.
The day will come when I need these glasses and I have them. I do love these sunglasses, Casey. And I was telling you before we started recording,
My problem with sunglasses is that I always either buy, like you said, a cheap gas station pair for $6, or I could debase myself by spending $200 on a pair of sunglasses at Nordstrom or some shit. I ain't doing that. Casey, Gooder are the perfect middle ground.
They sure are. Starting at $25, they're all 100% polarized. You can look into water and see through it.
Oh my God.
Which is incredible.
Is that true?
It is. They're polarized. Yeah.
Oh, well, these would be great for fishing, eh?
Exactly.
And they would be great for cycling, working out, golfing, going to the beach, hiking, or just walking around town.
Just doing anything. I rode my bike across Iowa with these sunglasses. People wear them while they are jogging. They stay on your face. They don't bounce. They are excellently made. I cannot recommend Gooder enough.
And Casey, they're pretty cool. In fact, you and I got a couple pairs.
Oh, yeah. What did you get?
Mine are called Hellhound Hallucinations.
Ooh, Alex, I got The Future is Void.
Amazing.
Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, that's the name of our sunglasses.
Yes.
Not our new catchphrases for completely arbitrary.
Hey, man, you know what I say. Hellhound Hallucinations.
Yeah, he does say that.
And if you want to support this show and try a pair of Gooder, they are giving Completely Arbitrary listeners free shipping. You can go to gooder.com/trees. That's GOODR.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Gooder offers a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Again, that's gooder.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Huh. We'll see you in the future.
Which is void.
And bright.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking sassafras. Scientific name, sassafras edibles?
Albidum.
Albidum.
I'm glad they didn't keep the edible in there.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't. Oh.
Wouldn't have been good.
What a great segue, Casey.
Thank you. Thank you.
Casey, let's talk sassafras.
Yeah. All right. So this is just a classic tree. It honestly comes out to be a little racist, I think, at the end of the day. But you know, the old Disney, Song of the South, I think it is?
I'm really worried about where this is going.
Oh, don't worry about it.
Okay,
I
know of the Song of the South.
So the Song of the South, so anyone who's never been in the South, Splash Mountain is the show or the that ride in Disney World, that whole thing is themed the South.
Right.
This tree, before I had ever been to the South, that was my entire that's what the South used to be like, but down, like frogs fishing and like all this kind of stuff, like super down home South.
Right.
And it is like that, except, you know, like I said, Disney has a less than savory view of the world. Back then, for sure.
Yes.
They've really made up a lot of ground, so kudos to them. So, not to conflate the sassafras with that, but the sassafras is, to me, the quintessentially Southern tree.
Okay.
And I don't think other people would necessarily agree with me, i.e. people from the South who are like, the sassafras, no. But historically, it has been.
Would you say that the sassafras is more Southern than the sugar maple?
I think so. I do think so.
Wow.
Because the sugar maple doesn't even grow south of the Mason-Dixon line.
All right. Well, we have a difference of opinion on that.
Now, tell me, Alex.
My opinion is that the sugar maple grows in the South.
Anywho, it's like root beer, like the classic kind of like you dig up the root, you brew it into something, you have this drink. Just like, you know, tea is indicative of the South to this day.
Yeah.
So this is like the classic sweet, spicy scent, as they call it, and like root beer, because they made root beer out of it. Like the very first thing, they called it sarsaparilla.
Right.
And it was just this classic drink. And not only that, it was used for thousands of years by the native peoples in this area. In fact, they are not sure if it was the Spanish that named it sassafras, or if it was actually from a Native American word that was extremely close to it, and it just kind of got changed a little bit just with lost in translation over, you know, a couple hundred years.
Interesting.
And so because of that, it has like a this appeal or this like historicity with it that I think is so fascinating, where it's just this one tree that had this one spiciness to it, kind of like, you know, the Spice Islands. They're like famous for these very specific spicy trees, and like it kind of has become a part of this sort of je ne sais quoi of an area, maybe.
Sure.
I don't know. But that's just what I think of whenever I think of the sassafras, because it is it was used initially, which is kind of what we want to talk about a little bit today, mm-hmm. as a medicinal plant.
Right.
And back then, they would dig up the roots, and we as humans, before we really like looked into things too specifically, if there was a spice of some kind or a plant that did something that was weird, you know, we could eat it, didn't do anything, it nourished us, great, there's food. If it did something weird, made us feel weird, had a weird smell to it, gave us a rash, yeah. it had some other kind of thing, it would be seen almost as medicinal, but also like powerful. So the plant would give you a rash, you're like, whoa, that plant is a spiritual plant. Like it's got something going on.
Yeah, of course.
And we would see it as that. And I mean, the whole world, like this is not just a Native American thing or from, you know, Africa or from Europe. It was across the world. The indigenous plants and the indigenous people, they looked at plants as food and medicine and everything. And so if it did something and it had this weird, you know, you dig the roots of a sassafras, they smelled really interesting. You could drink it and it had this really sweet, delicious, spicy taste. Then they would say, wow, this is, you know, this probably has some medicinal purpose.
And of course, there is still a culture of food as medicine.
Oh, 100%.
Which I feel like people are sort of, of course, some groups of people have been practicing this continually up until this day.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel like a lot of people, like myself, are starting to turn away from what I guess you would call Western medicine.
Yeah, where it's like, oh, it was like chemistry.
Medications, yeah. And, you know, pills and stuff. And turning toward, oh, let's take a look at the food I'm eating and the things I'm drinking.
Yeah.
Which of these are bothering me, and which of what's something that I'm not ingesting that could help me in some way?
Alex, that's so exactly right.
Yeah.
I'm happy you brought that up, because there's a lot of people who have even said, in order to get certain bacteria, like, why do kids eat dirt? Like, literally, it seems right. completely silly. And some people have surmised that they're actually getting a certain kind of bacteria in their gut that then becomes a part of their gut biome that then allows them to digest things. Because we, you know, like so many quotes right now, like people, we don't technically digest our food. There's bacteria and all these other different right. organisms that are doing the digesting for us. And then we are taking the carbohydrates to kind of put off. It's obviously a symbiotic relationship. So you can just argue, yes, it is us. Again, these big air quotes.
Yeah. Kids eat dirt for the same reason that baby koalas eat shit.
Yeah, exactly. Those cuties.
They got to get those microbes.
I'm so glad you brought that up. So, yeah. So what you're saying is that people should actually just eat the shit of other people in order to get
right.
the proper bacteria in their gut.
Finally, we get to it. This is what this whole thing's been about.
So we get these, the idea of food as medicine, Alex, is so, so accurate. And especially when that's all you did. Like, you didn't have, you had like these, you know, medicine people in your tribe or in your clan or in your area that would know plants. I mean, in Europe, it was the Druids, you know, they were kind of these witch doctors. That's how they're perceived or shown today. Yeah. But the idea is that they know, you know, okay, this plant works for this. This plant works for this. And did you know, they used to think if there would be a plant that grows near the area that are in the same space. What am I trying to think of? Oh gosh. If you get God, whoever had put on this planet, a specific plant that would cure something that's from that specific area that the plant grows in.
Okay.
Or like people used to, if you walk through stinging nettles, mm-hmm. there's a jewel weed that grows in the same area as the stinging nettle. So the assumption is, well, I walk through, I'm going to take some of this jewel weed that grows right next to the nettle and rub it on, and it will help soothe the stinging nettle. Turns out that's the case.
Okay.
And so everyone's like, yeah, that's right. And they used to think that that would be the kind of thing. So if a disease came from place A, then you could find a plant in place A that helped to cure or to treat that disease.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So from nature's perspective, what's happening there?
From nature's perspective, a coincidence just happened.
Oh.
That's literally it. It's
darn
not
it. All right.
Yeah, that was the kind of hope, you know, that's what everyone kind of was thinking was the case.
I see. I thought that was just a rule, like a real scientific rule.
God, that would be so good, wouldn't it? Like, oh man, I got malaria down here, so I'm going to go into the forest, I'm going to go find the cure for malaria. Oh, there it is. It's in the same place, and like give you a place to look.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's not that case.
All right. Well, yeah, I thought that was going to be pretty big breaking news if
yeah,
that was
right?
the case, I guess.
God, I wish I could. But yeah, this is like sassafras leaves, roots, and bark. They've all been used for medicinally like throughout a huge amount of time.
Yeah.
And we didn't necessarily eat them as food. It was like a medicinal thing strictly. Like you wouldn't go out and collect them and nom them down.
Yeah.
But like from everything, from kidney problems and scurvy, skin sores, toothaches, rheumatism, swelling, menstrual disorders, and sexually transmitted disease, bronchitis, you name it. Like it was just used for it as a fungicide, a dentifrice, rubefescent. God, I got that right the first time. Good
nice
for me.
Nice job.
Diaphoretic, perfume, carminative. You remember carminatives?
Carminative.
Yeah.
I know the word. What does it do?
It puts you on the very lowest level of the Schart chart.
Okay.
Yeah. Keeps your flatulence down.
Level zero on the Schart chart.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, that's right. That's
yeah,
right. That's
they,
right.
Yeah,
that's
it helps
right.
with flatulence.
Okay, so is there a theme here for what the sassafras does? Is
no,
there one master category?
They're everything. It was like it was a wonder drug.
Wow.
So much of a wonder drug that they actually sent it over to Europe because they found it in, you know, in the North America, and they said, hey, wow, this is amazing. So it said that it would cure almost any illness when they brought it over from America, United States, over to, or North America, over to Europe, specifically England. They brought it over there and they would use it for everything. And they would like say, oh, this and that. You can do so many cool things. It's a super drug. It's the chia seed of
yeah.
yesteryear kind of thing.
It sounds like you could put it in the same hall of fame as like the Salix family.
Yeah, kind of,
genus,
right?
Excuse me.
Yeah, which is good. I mean, you can also do Salicaceae, the family.
Sure.
I'll give you credit.
But, you know, like Willow was like a fucking gold mine as far as medicinal purposes.
It was a gold mine. Everyone loved it. And then slowly but surely, we like completely destroyed all the trees.
Good.
We cut them all down and sent them over to Europe or used them at the time, the colonies of the early United States.
Sassafras, okay.
Yeah. So it was almost gone. We had also cut down all their forests and turned them into farms and things like that.
Yeah.
So it was like, well, this is really great. We ended up using it not only for that, but also to, I think it's called a filet, gumbo filet. You take dried sassafras roots and you ground it into a powder, and it thickens gumbo.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's supposed to be very good.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to say, like it says, the Choctaw Indians taught the French to do this, which is pretty cool. Like, just grind up these leaves, and that was the term they use is like file or filet or fly. I don't know exactly the pronunciation.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would add it to these things and like really thicken them up. So it was,
okay.
It was used just about everywhere for everything, you know?
Kind of like a roux?
Yeah. Well, wait, a roux, huh?
Yeah. A roux is a soup thickening agent.
Huh.
It's, you mix flour and butter.
Yeah.
And make it into the color you want. And the darker the roux, the thicker it'll make the thing.
Oh. There you go. Yeah. It's exactly the same. And so
it's not, but
it's, wait, it sounds like, yeah,
similar. It does the same thing.
Okay. Sorry. I thought it sounded exactly the same. Well, Alex, it turns out that in the regard of like, oh, well, we found this disease from here and we got to find a place to treat it. The creme de la creme of that for the sassafras tree.
Uh-huh.
Was that there was a as soon as they brought it over from the United States or from North America over to England, at the time in London, there was a huge syphilis outbreak.
Wow.
And they had at the time thought that syphilis came from the United States. Hmm. And then all of a sudden, they had this fantastic wonder drug coming in from the United States. They said, wow, okay, so let's treat syphilis with sassafras. It's going to be great. And guess what happened?
It made it worse.
It did absolutely nothing.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe not as bad as making it worse, but everyone would just be treating their syphilis by just taking tincture of sassafras. And then like, I'm feeling better. And then turns out, A, no, they weren't.
Yeah.
And B, they were actually probably making themselves a little bit worse.
How so?
It turns out that sassafras is not only a good, deliciously smelling sweet thing, mm-hmm. it also has an oil in it, which is called safoil, I believe.
Oh, yes.
Or rather, I'm sorry, safrole. S-A-F-R-O-L-E.
Safrole. Yeah. Safrole. Okay.
Safrole. And not to be confused with saffron, very different.
Oh, yeah.
But did you know that saffron is actually just the stamen of the little plant called the crocus?
Casey, I did know this.
You're brilliant. My God, how much? That's what, you know why it's so expensive? Because there's someone with like tweezers picking out these tiny flower parts.
It's insane.
Man, I just think that's so funny.
Yeah.
It turns out safrole did two things. One, it was carcinogenic, and it would end up just giving you cancer. So you're taking it to treat your syphilis, and then it turns out, no, you're actually just getting kind of slowly giving yourself cancer.
Wow.
So that's not good.
Bummer.
It turns out that safrole also is a component in the drug MDMA.
Wow.
Which is an amphetamine.
Colloquially, Molly? Is that the same thing?
No, I think they're different.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know.
I'm such a square. I don't have any clue.
I should figure this out. If anyone's out there... add us or something. Actually, you know what? Don't add us. I don't want to get put on any lists here.
A list.
Yeah. Oh. But yeah, so that is that's you know, a little bit too bad. So it also like probably caused more damage to your liver and more damage to your kidneys than any positive benefit that you could get to solve your syphilis or anything else like that.
That makes you think, Casey. I mean, like, you know, we've talked about before, like with the first person to eat the mushroom.
Yeah, right.
You know? The first person to try safrole for their syphilis, or the first person to use this carcinogen to treat this
first
thing.
First of a fashion.
Yeah, I mean, then it catches on, and then suddenly everybody's giving their... I'm like, I wonder what right now is happening. Is it Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop?
Oh, it surely has to be, right. Where she's just like, hey, eat the sassafras tree.
Yeah.
It'll make your face clear.
It's actually killing your liver.
Slowly but positively.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the thing. But so the fun thing about this, and that you brought it up kind of earlier, which is the idea of folk medicine or folk like food as medicine, where at a time before, you know, the quote modern science, food was just medicine. Medicine was food,
right.
Or the distinction between the two was really minimal. It's like, oh, well, go grab this leaf, and the root of this thing. We're going to make a tea, we're going to give it to you, and it's going to soothe your rheumatism or something. So that's totally great. Then slowly but surely, we took those individual things that they would use, that leaf, that root, we'd measure them and say, oh, in this root, it has this compound, this one has this compound, this one has this compound. Then we'd use chemistry and create the next drug that does that. You also brought up salicylic acid. I think we said that wrong, if I remember correctly.
I think you just said it correctly, no?
Salicylic.
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 Anyway, that kind of acid from that tree, the tree acid of the willow, that is now what we use for the, it was the base molecule, now we artificially make it for aspirin.
That's right.
So in the regard for this, like you have these native uses that everywhere in the entire world, every population that was indigenous with an indigenous flora found these plants that did these certain things. Whether or not they actually worked, sometimes it's completely irrelevant. You know how the mind and the body work.
Yeah.
I could be someone that you trust so thoroughly, and I'd say, drink this tea, it will make you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
You drink it, and you're just so like, yes, I'm going to feel better. You feel better because your mind makes you feel better, and then your body helps to heal itself.
Right.
That's super powerful. It's just now, where there's so many questions, it doesn't work quite as well, because you there's so much distrust.
Yeah,
right?
there's a level of physiological advantage to believing that something will work,
yeah,
or trusting that something will work.
Now, you cannot believe and will yourself to take sassafras tea and solve your syphilis. Please go see a doctor. But that is kind of, there's two trajectories. One is the one we just talked about, where they find these, they being, you know, modern scientists, they find these compounds and they exploit them for exactly what they are, make specifically, you don't need to eat this leaf anymore, just take this compound that has the extract that we've made from this leaf.
Yeah.
The other way is that you find that it's actually really, really, really bad for you. And it's like, yeah, here, just take a little bit of cocaine. It'll help you during your pregnancy, ma'am.
Right.
Also, smoke these cigarettes to keep you nice and calm.
To keep your baby nice and thin.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, now we're like, oh, maybe we shouldn't prescribe cigarettes to, you know, solve your PTSD,
yeah.
You know? Or the, like, it used to be, yeah, just take a little bit opium to just, you know, take the edge off a little bit, you
right.
know, like these kinds of drugs that used to be like opiums from a very specific tea that they would make from the from poppies.
The poppy, yeah.
So it's like that was a thing and it was what they did, but they would do it like from the plant without making it so highly concentrated where it would just be something like aspirin that would just make you feel a little bit better. You wouldn't necessarily get addicted to it because you would have in such small amounts and it would be like this very specialized thing that, you know, 2,000 years ago, it would just be this tea tincture that some medicine person would give you.
Yeah, and because it's also not like synthesized and pure.
Yeah, exactly.
That comes with other things that are in that plant that might help, you know, balance the...
Yeah, it's exactly. It's kind of like sugar. People are like, well, what's the difference between eating, you know, a really sugary full orange or apple or something like that or banana
mm-hmm.
versus the juice or the other, you know, very specific sugary thing. And everyone's like, well, it's actually like the amount of fiber that you have in
right.
it and all these other compounds that either do this or do that and then all together are literally more than the whole.
Yes.
I think Michael Pollan's In Defense of Plants talks about this specifically mm. where scientists have done research on this and they're like, yeah, we can't really even quantify why it's better to eat an apple than drink an apple juice.
Right. A eating an orange will always be better for you than taking a vitamin D tablet.
Yes, exactly.
Or is it C? Vitamin C.
C. Probably both, honestly.
Oh, there you go.
Really. Anywho, so with the sassafras, it unfortunately has gone down just a little bit the wrong direction.
Yeah.
You can get the saffron out. I believe there's a chemical way that you can take it out from the plant,
oh, wow.
from the root. And this is specifically from the root. If you have a, you know, if you're hanging around and if you chew on a leaf for whatever reason, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
So with the sad trajectory, now it's like, well, it's an MDMA, you know, no one wants that around, or whoever doesn't want it. And then also you have the carcinogenic effects of it.
Yeah.
Kind of ruins a good thing that we thought was really great. But yeah, like I said, you know, have these two different trajectories that all come from the same spot, like folk medicine and like the uses of plants, which, like you said, amazingly like thorough throughout the entire world. And that's half the reason we're like, don't kill the rainforest. There's still a bunch of millions of plants and animals that we don't know could be this next thing.
Yeah.
The indigenous people that either are there still or used to be there probably know/knew about. It's like, yeah, you eat the leaf of this very specific tree, it's probably going to solve your, you know, this thing.
Anyway, well said, Casey.
That's what I think.
With that, I'd love to get into our review of the sassafras tree.
I think we should. I'm going to pull up an image of the bark so that I can make sure not to give it a bad review.
Priming the pump.
Oh my God.
Here's how it works. We'll give some final thoughts and then I give it a score.
That's right.
Of 0 to 10 golden poems of honor for our season 4 plant-based diet.
Mm-hmm.
Casey, as our resident expert, will begin with you.
Okay. So here's the thing about the sassafras. I think it's spectacular.
Wow.
Not to mention, if you look at it during approximately now, it has this really beautiful fall color that goes from like a medium yellow to like a very bronzy kind of red.
Hmm.
Worth it.
Sounds cool.
So the fact that this is a tree that is just so like, I don't know, it's the quintessential southern tree, because like you would just go dig up some roots and then you get a bunch of roots, you make a little tea out of it and you give it off to your friends and everyone's having a great time with the root of this thing. I think that's great. I love that it was the root. Also, I don't know if we covered it. Sarsaparilla root beer, that comes from the sassafras.
Yes,
initially.
The root of root beer is the root of a sassafras.
Exactly. And I just think that's so fun. Like it's It was so delicious that we now have entire like genres of soda pop that come from it because of, you know, how cool this plant is. I love that it was like a Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop style wonder drug back in Europe. Unfortunately, probably it didn't do very good things, but I love that idea where everyone's like, sassafras, come get your sassafras, and everyone's lining up to, you know, just get their little dose of it.
Yeah, they're putting drops of sassafras oil into their into the perfume that they spray on their powdered wig.
Exactly. Yeah. So gorgeous. Not to mention, I just love that the whole thing is so beautiful. Like, the plant's really gorgeous. I like how it grows. I like its leaves. I like that it doesn't go wild and go crazy.
Yeah.
I love the bark. So I'm going to give the sassafras tree 8.2 for a medium tree. Doing cool stuff. Not too cool, but just cool enough.
Wow.
It's a high rating, but...
It is kind of high. I'm a little surprised, but good.
I think it's worth it. I think underplanted. That's what I want to say.
Wow. A Casey clap first.
So underplanted. We should plant 300 more of them everywhere, all the time.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's, 300, yeah, okay.
300. Well, 300 per square mile.
Oh.
Yeah, maybe... all right, maybe 2 square miles.
Take this tree out of the south and put it in the north and the northwest and the southwest.
It shall take over the world.
You know what you should do is you should get on the back of a train car.
Yeah.
And you should take sassafras seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And you should just like throw them out like that presidential candidate.
That's brilliant.
Who went on the train car.
And did that? That one?
No, he didn't do that, but he like... I think to show he was like a down-to-earth dude. He was like,
see, look, I ride trains.
I ride the train, too. Yeah, it's not just the beef and you guys.
Hold on. That's Joe Biden. You're talking about Joe Biden. Must have been back when he was just a senator in 1936.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. Cool.
He's an immortal lizard person. A lot of people don't know that.
A lot of people don't know that, but a surprising amount do.
Yeah, Google it.
Surprising amount do.
That's all I'll say. Google it.
Like, 1, 2, 3, Google it.
Casey... I have some thoughts on the sassafras.
We should get sponsored by Google.
No.
What are your thoughts, Alex?
This isn't a perfect analogy, but I'm thinking about it a little bit. You probably saw me glazed over a bit at certain points in this episode.
No, I didn't. Your eyes were constantly like thoroughly fixed with interest. Oh, okay. It's just your default so that no one ever knows.
My glaze is default?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, see. In the Fantastic Mr. Fox, when the badger like gets those eyes, yeah,
okay. That is me. Sometimes when we're talking about trees, I don't think this is a perfect analogy, but to me, the sassafras is a bit like the child actor whose parents saw so much potential in.
Oh my god!
And they said, "Oh my god, this kid is so charismatic. He's kind. He's funny." Great natural comedic timing. Let's put him up for auditions.
Okay.
And the kid is like, but. And they go, shut up. Get out there.
Oh.
And they put him on the stage and he does the song and dance and everybody fucking loves it. And everybody's ecstatic about this child that is big hit. Right?
Yeah. Okay.
And then the kid, you know, 12 years later is like, okay, I never told you guys this. I hate performing. I'm done.
Yeah.
And suddenly ruins his reputation. But it's really his parents' fault in the first place. They're the one who put him on a pedestal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm going with this?
I think so, yeah.
Forgive us for the vacuum in the hallway.
It's a part of the thing.
Yeah. He ended up vacuuming hallways for... Oh, here's a sound effect. Casey, I think the sassafras is both overrated and underrated. I don't know where to go with this guy.
Oh my god.
So I'm going to kind of go somewhere down the middle ish. I'm going to give it a
6.0.
A pat on the head and I'm moving on.
Oh god. And you know what? According to your metaphor, as you move on, the sassafras is like, "Thank you. That's literally all I want."
That's what it wants.
Okay.
Wants to vacuum hallways.
Wow. Just wants to vacuum hallways. Just go for your dreams.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
6.0 Golden Poems of Honor. Casey.
Wow.
The sassafras did all right today. You know, I think it gets big asterisk.
I think it totally does. I honestly, you know what the asterisk is going to be?
Huh.
Go look at the bark at Hoyt Arboretum on the path that goes down to the magnolias from wherever it is. I can't even remember. I know, actually, I could literally, if I just started walking right now, I could walk directly there without taking a single wrong turn.
Wow.
And that's probably like a 4-mile walk.
That's a ways.
But the bark is worth it. Highly recommend it. And go look at those cute little leaves.
There you have
That's the asterisk. Make it up for yourself. Your cones are your own. New roots, new shoots. Quercus aeternum.
Arbitrarypod.com/merch. That was our review of the Sassafras Tree. Casey, this week we have a guest chef. I will also use the word brewer.
Ah.
We reached out to John Eads at the Portland Craft Soda Company asking about sassafras and root beer.
These were in
the before times, before we knew the kind of the darker side of the history of this root.
Which I have to say, I was really excited. I knew a little bit about it. Obviously, doing more research gave it a little more clarity.
Yeah.
But as soon as you reached out, I was like, that would be so perfect. And in my heart, I was like, I wonder if he actually uses this the way that traditionally was used, or if there's some alternative or something. And we learned here that there was an alternative also.
That's right, Casey. Let's hear what John has to say.
This is John Eads. I am the founder of Portland Craft Sodas. We are a Portland-based soda company. Our primary location for selling is at Pyro Pizza, 12th and Hawthorne in Southeast Portland. Portland Craft Soda currently makes two sodas that are in the root beer family. The first one is the quintessential American root beer. This is a soda that was created and popularized in America. The other one is a sarsaparilla. Sarsaparilla came to America from other places and was adapted here. You might be familiar with the sarsaparilla because often in old westerns, a dusty old cowboy will belly up to the bar and ask for a sarsaparilla. This will often get weird looks from the other patrons at the bar. The American root beer was originally flavored with the roots, leaves, and stems of the sassafras tree. But in the 1960s, the FDA found that the sassafras tree contains sarsaparol, which is also in a number of other food items. But it was a concern to them because it was shown to cause cancer in rats. It also so happens to be a precursor chemical in the role of the manufacturer of MDMA. So consequently, the FDA banned its use in all commercial food products. It's still available on the market if you wanted to try it as a flavor for syrups or sodas, but it's not allowed in the manufacture of commercially available food products. Industry-wide, most soda manufacturers have moved to artificial flavoring, but even the natural companies have now moved to artificial flavorings for the root beers because it is so hard to approximate the flavor. For Portland Craft Sodas, we try to approximate that flavor by using roots and herbs, about 15 different ingredients, in order to get a similar flavor, a complex flavor, but not the same flavor as the sassafras. We use an Indian sarsaparilla, which is similar to sarsaparilla that is common in the Americas, as far as flavor goes, but the flavor is more intense for the Indian sarsaparilla. So if you want to create a similar flavor to the sarsaparilla in sassafras, you can somewhat approximate that with sarsaparilla. Now, sarsaparilla is commonly available in powdered form or in what the industry calls cuts and sifted. It's just pieces of roots and stems that then can be used to process into flavors.
Wow. Casey. Yeah,
I'm so first off, as a radio guy.
Yeah.
It sounded like he could have been that patron at the bar.
Yes.
Ordering sarsaparilla, wearing a cowboy hat and all his boots and everything. What a voice.
A great voice for radio, John. Thank you so much for that. Casey, what I loved about that whole thing was that it was very much sort of an encapsulation of what you and I talked about today.
Perfect.
But from a food manufacturing perspective, which I thought was fascinating, that you can still buy sarsaparilla.
I didn't know that.
But you can't use it in commercially made food products.
Yeah, so you just have to like do it in like maybe a small batch or something.
Yeah, I guess so.
Just for yourself.
Banned by the FDA, but you can still get down with that at home.
Yeah, amazing. And I just love that they the Indian sarsaparilla that he talked about. And also, I've heard it like said several ways, sarsaparilla,
which,
side note, one of my favorite bands, I think they're in, they used to be from Portland via Chicago, and now they're in New Orleans. Look them up, sarsaparilla. They're older stuff, great. If you can see them live and you're down in New Orleans, do.
That's great.
Anyway, also sarsaparilla. Everyone says sarsaparilla. S-A-R-S-A-P-A-R-I-L-L-A.
Yeah, it's like a that's like a Boston pronunciation of sarsaparilla.
Yeah, sarsaparilla.
Because you had that R on the end of an long A.
Yeah.
Or is that a short A? I don't know.
I don't know. It's an A.
It's
anyway,
an A.
Anyway, yeah, that the plant he's talking about is a vine. It's called Hemidesmus indicus, which you can apparently get. So I love it. And the fact that he's like, well, we really want to approximate the flavor. It's impossible to just get the same one. But we really want to get that really same, you know, spicy, complex flavor of that, you know. It makes me want to try to do a sassafras my own way, but also I'm petrified of drinking something that's known to be a carcinogen.
Yeah, mm. And also the fact that they use about 15 or 16 different ingredients to approximate this one
very
root.
Good. Yeah, that's incredible.
That is sort of testament to the complexity of this of the sassafras.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, our thanks to John Eads. Check out Portland Craft Soda. I've had their soda before. It's delish.
It's so good. And the fact that you would put so much effort into making some delicious soda like that, man, you got to give credit.
Yeah. I love any craft version of anything that's like a mass market thing.
Yeah, it totally, because it's usually done with so much more passion and like pointedness, you know?
Yes, and healthier usually too.
Yeah, that's true.
Check out portlandcraftsoda.com or like go eat at their, go eat at that food cart pod and get yourself some soda.
Last bit, if you do, if you are a purveyor of sass or sarsaparilla, then let us know what the flavor's like. Let us know how it works for you.
Yeah.
I'm very curious. I kind of just want to go dig up the roots of one just to give it a smell, you know, and just see what it's like.
Oh, yeah.
Mm, yeah, maybe I'll do that. Don't tell the Arboretum I'm going there tomorrow.
You show up with a knife.
Casey, what are you doing? How could you?
Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary Q and A. I chose this question because it's something that we hear a lot. Well, you'll see.
Yeah, let's see. What do we got?
It's from Andrew Takash.
Hey, Andrew.
Or Takach.
I like Takashich.
Andrew also puts in parenthetical next to his name, good luck with that. I just saw that.
Nice. I love it. He's going to like send us a voicemail and be like, it's Ty Ty.
Yeah, it's like, Andro.
Yeah. Dude, yeah, he's good.
Hey, Casey and Alex.
Bonjour.
My wife and I recently purchased some land, and we're looking to build a home on the property in the next couple months.
Okay.
The area is almost entirely wooded, and we would need to remove some trees. Mm-hmm. We want to keep the oldest, healthiest, and adjust the location of the house accordingly.
Oh, beautiful.
What kind of company/person should we reach out to locally to help us choose which trees to design around? Thanks for your help, Casey.
Oh, my God.
I chose this question because it is a poster child for like 50% of the questions we get.
Yes.
Which are, who do I talk to about this, this, this?
Excellent.
Casey, I thought you would enjoy answering this question. Please have at it.
Yes. If you're in Portland, Oregon, contact arborist Casey Clapp at casey@arbitrarypod.com.
Hell yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. That's the perfect person is a consulting arborist.
Consulting arborist.
Yes. And there's lots of them out there. They're all over the United States. Or just an arborist who does tree preservation plans.
Okay.
So as we've talked about before, arborists are a really broad spectrum of workers. Some are, they just go up, they climb trees, they prune them, they remove them, they do that kind of work. Mm. Some will do tree risk assessments, and they'll say, okay, this tree is really good, really bad, or okay, and here's how we're going to mitigate this risk based on some criteria, set of parameters. Others will do that, but then everything else has to do with the tree, where they're consulting where you could say, is my tree sick? They'll give you an answer. Is, you know, can I protect this tree? Can I do this? Can I do that? How could I do this if I wanted to do it like this question? And the answer is a professional consulting arborist. Ideally, minimum qualification, they should be a certified arborist.
Okay.
The other minimum, through the International Society of Arboriculture.
ISA.
Exactly. That's the one. Or if you're in Massachusetts, they also have the Massachusetts Certified Arborist. That's also a pretty good program. So the second thing is that you want someone who's got some experience, and specifically experience in tree preservation plans.
Mm.
And what's important about that is that unfortunately, there are good arborists and there are not so good arborists. Some, they just want to get the job. And those are like the tree care companies that are like the ones where when you see the picture of them, all they're doing is like a bunch of, you know, bunch of folks like showing off their chainsaws and how big the trees are that they're cutting down.
Oh.
As opposed to the companies that like say, we're a tree preservation company, and they show people hanging in a tree doing pruning, you know?
Right.
And it's just that visual difference where it's like, yeah, we cut down trees, bigger the better, we're hardcore. And we're just, that's what they want to do. They want to do it as quickly and easily, as coolly as possible.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, and so if you're in the industry, you can kind of tell the difference between the two. You can start getting a feel, at least. But some will say, "Oh, we'll give you free estimates, or we'll give you free consultations." That's really just saying we'll come out and look at your property and we'll sell you the job,
right?
You know, as opposed to someone who says we do consulting, where we will come out and we will write a report and answer your questions.
Okay.
In this report. So if you're building a house, you have a lot to think about. Real quick, how are you going to access it, what trees need to come out, and then what trees are going to be impacted that you're going to keep around.
Mm-hmm.
So if you build a house that's, let's say, 40 by 40 square, it doesn't matter. Just, you know, you have a 40 by 40 square house. You have to build the foundation. You then have to put a roof. The roof is going to extend a certain distance out from that foundation. You're going to need X amount of area around that foundation to walk and to move. You may have to put a garage over here. You may have to have a driveway access. And the tree roots of all the trees around that you're keeping extend out,
right,
horizontally. They don't go down. They go out. So the longer or the closer you get to a tree, the more impact you're going to get. Some people say, yeah, just cut all these trees down and put it right here. That ends up cutting a bunch of significant roots for the rest of the tree. You're also causing a new edge inside of the forested area where there used to not be edges. There used to be one full canopy, right?
Interesting.
So you want to say, okay, let's take the healthy species and the ones that will do the best at surviving this. Coincidentally, the smaller the tree, the easier it is because their root zone is smaller and they can bounce back from disturbance a little easier.
Hmm.
Whereas if you say, I want to save this big, gigantic, massive tree and we're going to build our house 10 feet from it. It may survive because it has such a good base and foundation, but you also might just kill a really big tree and work really hard. The consulting arborist will be the person to ask.
I'd like to get even almost comically granular with this process.
Ooh, okay.
Are we Googling consulting arborist in Enter City?
Yes.
Okay.
That would be the best way to do it.
And you just see like ratings, like Yelp ratings or Google ratings?
Yeah, you can see that a lot of times. Most of the time you're going to see ads for arborist companies that say, yeah, we'll cut down your tree.
Sure.
Skip through the ads.
Yeah. That's any Google search.
Yeah, and then find that. But you can also look on the ASCA website, which is American Society of Consulting Arborists.
ASCA?
Yes.
Okay.
You can get on their website and you can look for a consulting arborist who has that certification.
That's great.
Or Heather has qualifications through them. You can also look on the ISA's website and say and find a someone who does consulting or who is a certified arborist near you. Find their company and then look through their company and see, does this company look like a bunch of guys that just want to cut down trees, or does it look like a bunch of people who are really looking to maintain trees and they will give you the best advice? If they actively say, we try to preserve trees, they would be the people to call, in my opinion.
I love that distinction of like, what photo do they use to promote their company?
If there's a couple photos of them doing big work, that's great. But
if that's their brand, like we're hardcore lumberjacks, that's probably a good warning sign.
It's probably a good warning sign, yeah. And if they have experience writing reports, that's really the big one. Like for the city of Portland, you need a report written.
Mm.
If they just don't know what they're doing, like if they have no clue how close can you get to a tree without destroying all the roots, what species of trees is each one, because different species would be less likely or more likely to withstand these impacts. Some species will just die immediately and then start to decay and fall over. If they can't tell the difference between a cottonwood and an aspen, then that could be a big deal. But usually there's not going to be the same in the same spot. But yeah, if they can't identify the trees, this is one of the big things. If you're talking to someone, random person, and they're like, "Oh, I'm an arborist," and you're like, "Oh, cool," you know, you had some drinks, you're a little swilly, you're like, "Oh, well, Mr. Arborist, what's that tree over there?" In my opinion, which is probably way biased, people who like claim to be, you know, tree people professionally, and someone like, it's the first question that usually comes up. It's like, "Oh, well, what's that tree? Oh, I really have a tree that I want you. Could you tell me what this tree is?"
Yeah.
And if they can't identify that tree, a part of me is like, "Oh, man, go start at square one.
Wow.
You know, you're working with pipes. You at least know the size and diameters of these pipes. Like, you know, learn to work with the thing that you're working with.
Interesting.
I, like I said, am biased, but I think that's the first step in diagnostics and knowing anything.
I think that's perfectly fair.
Yeah. So you walk out into this property, and if that arborist is like, oh, yeah, well, you can do this, and they don't even identify the trees, or if they identify them all wrong, it's like, man, you're making a bunch of decisions off already faulty ground.
Yeah.
So someone who has the experience, who knows what they're talking about, the certification is the first step. Board certified master arborist is the next step, not necessary at all. It's just like the next level up. You know, it's another way for the company or the ISA to kind of make money, for better or for worse. But the more experience and someone who can look at your trees with a very discernible eye and tell you here is the best way to do it. Move your house away and shift it around because you can have a million different sizes and shapes of houses. It has to follow certain code requirements in a lot of places. But honestly, have fun with it. And the more, I don't necessarily recommend cutting your house out around a tree or something like that because inevitably you kind of kill the tree and then you just wasted a bunch of time, effort, space, design for something that's just going to die in 10 years anyway because the roots are so compromised. Anyway, I could go on.
Yeah.
But essentially, yes, Google consulting arborist in your area. Have a couple people come out, and if they understand what you're saying and they're very thorough with it, saying, yeah, okay, let's figure this out, and they measure things and they walk it with you and they say, well, if you shift it over here, that's the kind of conversation that you want to be having, as opposed to someone who says, oh no, these are all dangerous. You can't do that. That's just irresponsible. They don't know what they're talking about because that's just certainly not the case.
Sweet. Thank you so much for your question, Andrew. If you have a question for Casey about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram. What's up?
I'm just so excited that that people are like, hey, I want to build this house and retain these trees. How can I do this? It's so refreshing.
It's
Alex.
Great.
While working at the city, most of the time I was working with developers who were like, hey, all these trees need to come out.
Right.
And then you had to fight that battle against them. They'd hire one of these less than savory arborists, and then all of a sudden they say, yeah, here's the arborist report, says every tree's dangerous. And it's just like, you shake your head.
People looking for a quick, easy solution.
Exactly. And that easy solution is what's got us in this climate crisis to begin with.
Oh, boy.
And it has changed our entire way to look at it. Sorry, Alex, I'll stop there.
No, that's a good... I completely agree with you. I just didn't want to tip you off on that.
Yeah, sorry. Well, a topic for another time. Yeah. Anyway, I'm stoked that this question came up because it's one that's very, very close and personal to my heart.
Yes, I thought you might like it.
Anyway.
Follow us on Instagram at arbitrarypod. That's A-R-B-O-R-T-R-A-R-Y pod. Or support the podcast and keep this motor running. Patreon.com/arbitrarypod. You can subscribe there for $5 or $10 a month. Become a part of the Arboretum. 2 bonus episodes every single month about other related topics and trees. Or join the Cone of the Month Club and get a unique die-cut cone sticker illustrated by an independent artist every single month in your mailbox. Casey Clapp.
Alex
Can
Croson.
You believe we've done it again?
Spectacular. Every time it gets done, I'm always just like, wow. Wow.
This week, I do definitely feel that way.
This was a big week for us, yeah.
Yeah, we recorded many episodes this week. Mm-hmm. It's finally over.
We finally did it. Congratulations.
Congratulations to you, too. And congratulations to you for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Over. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.